Welcome to Poems for Company. I'm your host, Brian Dillon. Recently, I attended the movie titled Sometimes I Think About Dying at the Columbian Movie Theater in Astoria. Most of the movie takes place in Astoria, and at one point, the protagonist attends a movie at the Columbian. So I watched a movie in which the main character crosses the same street I just crossed and stands in the entranceway by the ticket booth as I just did. The movie explicitly recreated my very actions in the exact same space. That's a meta moment. The movie anticipated movements I then replicated. My fellow audience members recognized this too. Together, we released a collective, "Oh," when we saw the young female protagonist cross the very street so close to where we were sitting. Consider this second example. Northern Song was the name of the publishing company that had a contract with the Beatles. George Harrison wrote the lyrics to Only a Northern Song. George Harrison's lyrics indicate how displeased he was with the business framework for his artistic contributions. The Beatles' contract with the publishing company Northern Song ensured that major shareholders profited more from his compositions than George Harrison himself did. The lyrics to Only a Northern Song say, essentially, "If you won't pay me fairly, I'll just go through the motions and the songs I write for your company." Consider these lyrics. "When you listen late at night, you may feel the words are not quite right. But they are. They just play like that. It doesn't really matter what chords I play, what words I say, or time of day it is, as it's only a northern song." Pretty cheeky for a musician in his 20s. Also, the instrumentation is a bit off-key for this song, so both the lyrics and the sound express Harrison's dismissive attitude toward the businessman who wielded some power over him. Harrison's lyrics are a popular example of metaverse. Like George Harrison, some poets comment within their poem about the very poem we're reading. The poem pulls back the curtain and reveals the composing process. Or, at least, that's what the poem pretends to do. The poems I'll read today make a virtue out of being self-conscious. So, I'm titling this episode Metaverse. I realize the term meta may be overused. Even a new corporation has co-opted the term. But I'm using the term to refer to poems that tell us about the motives of the poet when writing the very poem we are reading. Poems that try to explain why they're structured the way they are and why the speaker expresses a specific attitude. Poems that are self-conscious about themselves. Metaverse. In the poem, The Suggestion Box, the poet Billy Collins says, "Maybe I should write a poem about all the people who think they know what I should be writing poems about." Well, that's certainly a situation of metaverse. In the poem, The Suggestion Box, a poet encounters various community members, a waitress, a student, a woman he barely knows, a friend, all of whom are familiar with his work, all of whom presume his poems emerge from quirky personal incidents. They also seem to agree the subject of poems may be limitless. One figure appears at the poem's end, who seems to realize best of all what Collins should write next. This is Billy Collins' poem, The Suggestion Box. It all began fairly early in the day, at the coffee shop, as it turned out, when the usual waitress said, "I'll bet you're going to write a poem about this," after she had knocked a cup of coffee into my lap. Then later in the morning, I was told by a student that I should write a poem about the fire drill that was going on as we all stood on the lawn outside our building. In the afternoon, a woman I barely knew said, "You could write a poem about that," pointing to a dirigible that was passing overhead. And if all that were not enough, a friend turned to me as we walked past a man whose face was covered with tattoos and said, "I see a poem coming." Why is everyone being so helpful, I wondered that evening by the shore of a lake. Maybe I should write a poem about all the people who think they know what I should be writing poems about. It was just then, in the fading light, that I spotted a pair of ducks emerging from a cluster of reeds to paddle out to open water, the female glancing back over her russet shoulder just in time to see me searching my pockets for a pen. "I knew it," she quacked with a bit of a brogue. "But who can blame you for following your heart?" she went on. "Now, go write a lovely poem about me and the mister." That's Billy Collins' poem, The Suggestion Box. I suppose I should have apologized in advance. I can't replicate the voice of a female duck quacking with a brogue. Collins devotes 4 stanzas of varying lengths to the 4 people who suggest different prompts for new poems he could write. Then the poet considers his circumstance. Why is everyone being so helpful? I wondered that evening by the shores of a lake. Maybe I should write a poem about all the people who think they know what I should be writing poems about. Where do poets get their ideas? Billy Collins does not say. Do they need to be provoked by a dirigible passing overhead? What might a poet say about a stranger with a tattooed covered face? What sort of notes was the speaker going to jot down when he sees a pair of ducks and searches for his pen? The female of this pair emerges from a cluster of reeds into open water, perhaps interrupted after a secret rendezvous. Knowing she's been observed, she addresses the speaker. "I knew it, but who can blame you for following your heart?" What is she implying? Does she suspect the speaker might need some intimacy tips from ducks? She gets the final words. "Now, go write a lovely poem about me and the mister," she says. And we are left to imagine that to-be-written poem, just as we wonder if he ever wrote a poem about the cup of coffee spilled into his lap, the fire drill, the dirigible, the man with facial tattoos. If you and a partner work from home, perhaps even in adjoining rooms, you might find this next poem speaks to thoughts you've had about such close proximity in your workspace. Stephen Dunn's speaker, in his poem Bad, may be some version of his private self. Dunn's speaker interrupts his wife, who is trying to work. He shapes his poem around her response to his interruptions. Both her facial expressions and her summarized remarks are noted in Bad. I'll read the poem and then offer just a few comments on it. This is Stephen Dunn's poem, Bad. My wife is working in her room, writing, and I've come in 3 times with idle chatter, some not new news. The 4th time, she identifies me as what I am, a man lost in late afternoon, in the terrible in-between. Good work long over, a good drink not yet what the clock has okayed. Her mood a little bemused, leave me the hell alone, mixed with a weary smile. And I see my face up on the post office wall, among men least wanted, looking forlorn. In the small print under my name, annoying to loved ones in the afternoons, lacks inner resources. I go away, guilty as charged, and write this poem, which I insist she read at drinking time. She's reading it now. It seems she's pleased, but when she speaks, it's about charm and how predictable I am, how, when in trouble, I try to become irresistible, like one of those blonde dogs with a red bandana around his neck. Sorry, he's peed on the rug. Forget it, she says. This stuff is old. It won't work anymore. And I hear, good boy, good boy, and can't stop licking her hand. Stephen Dunn's Bad. So we are to presume the wife of the speaker reads an earlier version of the poem I just read aloud. He knows he's chattering at her when she's trying to concentrate. He knows he's guilty of intruding on her time and space when she just wants to be left alone. In the poem's penultimate sentence, which spills out over 7 lines, he watches her read his poem. He tries to interpret her facial expression and then summarizes her instant critique. It seems she's pleased, but when she speaks, it's about charm and how predictable I am. How, when in trouble, I try to become irresistible, like one of those blonde dogs with a red bandana around his neck. Sorry, he's peed on the rug. Either the speaker is so needy to hear her offer instant validation for his poem, or he willfully misunderstands what she intends. Here's the final 4 lines. Forget it, she says. This stuff is old. It won't work anymore. And I hear, good boy, good boy, and can't stop licking her hand. Bad. That's a title a dog could understand. Stephen Dunn's poem comically expresses the poet's self-deprecation. The poet is a man lost in late afternoon and annoying to loved ones. Both Billy Collins' The Suggestion Box and Stephen Dunn's Bad are meta-poems delivered with a sense of humor. Dunn's speaker knows his face should be displayed on the post office wall among men least wanted. The next poem avoids any comic element. The Irishman W.B. Yeats was convulsed by desire for Maud Gonne, a stage presence in plays, and a fiery political rabble-rouser. His unrequited romantic passions for Maud Gonne endured for decades. Back in the 1890s, when Yeats was in his 20s, he wrote the poem When You Are Old, which we may suspect was written with Maud Gonne in mind. I realize it's dangerous to presume any poem speaker is an exact representation of the poet. So I'll tread cautiously here. Old age, both for Yeats' speaker and for the object of his desire, lies far off in the distance. When you are old, not now that you are old. It's a most curious short poem comprising one sentence spilling out over 12 lines. This is W.B. Yeats' When You Are Old. When you are old and gray and full of sleep and nodding by the fire, take down this book and slowly read and dream of the soft look your eyes had once and of their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled and paced upon the mountains overhead and held his face amid a crowd of stars. W.B. Yeats, When You Are Old. There's some wonderful meta-commentary here. Yeats' speaker anticipates the poem he's writing will be available in book form in the future, and the woman he desires will, when she's much older, own a copy and read it. Then, belatedly, she will regret what she lost by not returning his love so many decades earlier. The speaker may even imagine she has remained on her own, unattached to any romantic partner. When You Are Old serves as a warning to the woman in the present, and also a judgment upon her. He implies the woman will be sorry for not returning the speaker's love. He would have been her best choice. He praises her pilgrim soul, her daring, adventurous spirit. Will anyone else ever appreciate that quality as much as he does? Remember, Yeats is in his 20s when he writes this, and he assumes his love would stay strong as they aged. He says he would always love the sorrows of your changing face. Let's hear W.B. Yeats' When You Are Old once more. When you are old and gray and full of sleep and nodding by the fire, take down this book and slowly read and dream of the soft look your eyes had once and of their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled and paced upon the mountains overhead and held his face amid a crowd of stars. W.B. Yeats, When You Are Old. I read the same poem on an earlier episode of Poems for Company on the March 2023 show, where the theme was unrequited love. But it also serves our purpose as an exemplary example of metaverse. Yeats' short poem emphasizes the emotional power his writing will have on his most important audience, the one woman whose unwillingness to return his love has shaped him, or misshaped him, for many years. Like most poems, When You Are Old fits a variety of thematic categories. Our final poem also dramatically highlights the poet's intentions to provoke a specific emotional response from his audience. Now, without getting too morbid about it, Do you ever think about what music you want played at your memorial service? Lawrence Robb's poem, Request, describes the music he wants to be played, and more to the point, the effect he hopes this music has on his audience of friends who have gathered to mourn his death. He thinks he wants a classic rock and roll song, then maybe a portion of a Schubert quintet, and he finally settles on a jazz trio performance. This is Lawrence Robb's Request. For a long time, I was sure it should be Jumping Jack Flash. Then the Adagio from Schubert's C major quintet. But right now, I want Oscar Peterson's You Look Good to Me. That's my request. Play it at the end of the service, after my friends have spoken. I don't believe I'll be listening in. But sitting here, I'm imagining you could be feeling what I'd like to feel. Defiance from the Stones. Grief and resignation with Schubert. But now, Peterson and Ray Brown are making the moment sound like some kind of release. Sad enough at first, but doesn't it slide into tapping your feet, then clapping your hands, maybe standing up in that shadowy hall in Paris in the late 60s when this was recorded, getting up and dancing, as I would not have done, and being dead cannot, but might wish for you, who would then understand what a poem, or perhaps only the making of a poem, just that moment when it starts, when so much is still possible, has allowed me to feel. Happy to be there, carried away. Lawrence Robb's Request. Robb's speaker anticipates his mourners will feel the defiance in Jumping Jack Flash, perhaps a sense that the speaker's death should not deflate his friends and family, but inspire them. Yet he's also willing to pull the mourners in the opposite emotional direction, provoking them with the grief and resignation in Schubert's C major quintet. But he intends to save the best for last, after his friends have spoken, at the end of the service. He anticipates his mourner's emotional response to the sounds of Oscar Peterson's trio of piano, bass, drums will move them from sadness to feet tapping and hand clapping and maybe even to dancing. That's the very effect You Look Good to Me by Oscar Peterson has on Robb's speaker. And why did I read this poem in an episode about metaverse? The poem speaker imagines a dual audience. Both his future mourners, whom he expects will respond to the music as he does, and his readers of this poem request. He desires that both be able to feel the joy of possibility he experiences when he begins to write a poem. Sometimes, when he puts pen to paper, he launches from an emotional springboard. There may be some fellow poets attending his memorial service, and they might comprehend this feeling automatically, but he wants to create the conditions so that everyone there is swept away by the feeling he experienced when he wrote many of his poems, including, presumably, this one, Request. Metaverse, and in Lawrence Robb's case, an ecstatic fantasy. Let's hear his poem once more. For a long time, I was sure it should be Jumping Jack Flash. Then the Adagio from Schubert's C major quintet. But right now, I want Oscar Peterson's You Look Good to Me. That's my request. Play it at the end of the service, after my friends have spoken. I don't believe I'll be listening in, but sitting here, I'm imagining you could be feeling what I'd like to feel. Defiance from the Stones. Grief and resignation with Schubert. But now, Peterson and Ray Brown are making the moment sound like some kind of release. Sad enough at first, but doesn't it slide into tapping your feet, then clapping your hands, maybe standing up in that shadowy hall in Paris in the late 60s when this was recorded, getting up and dancing, as I would not have done, and being dead cannot, but might wish for you, who would then understand what a poem, or perhaps only the making of a poem, just that moment when it starts, when so much is still possible, has allowed me to feel. Happy to be there. Carried away. Lawrence Robb's request. Thanks for joining me in this brief exploration of self-reflexive poems, poems that seem to comment on the very poem we're reading. If you have any suggestions for themes you'd like me to consider on future shows, please contact me, Brian Dillon, at feedback@kmun.org. Or you might have some corrections or questions. Let me know at feedback@kmun.org. To hear this episode again, or to hear any Poems for Company episode, go to kmun.org, click on the podcast tab, and click on Poems for Company. You will also find there a list of all the poems read on this and each episode. I hope you're thinking you'd like to look up some of these poems on your own so that you might reread them yourself. Find out what other gems these same authors have published. My show's theme music is Philip Auberg's Going to the Sun, available on his CD Live from Montana at sweetgrassmusic.com.